In the 1970s, black baseball players made up almost a fifth of all major league rosters. Today, that number has dropped below 8%, and so it's not much of a stretch to say that the national pastime no longer really represents the nation. The Washington Post has spent this baseball season trying to understand why black participation in the sport has fallen so far, and how racism always did and still does affect the game. The project is called The Nine. It's a series of nine profiles of legendary black baseball players who made significant contributions to the sport. People like Vida Blue, Bo Jackson, CC Sabathia. The Post national baseball reporter Chelsea Janes helped put the story together, and she joins us now. Chelsea, it's good to speak with you.
You too. Thank you for having me.
So how do you go from 20% of all major leaguers are black to less than 8% today? What happened?
It's obviously something that's sort of a multifaceted process. I think that part of it is simply that, you know, a lot of black kids looked up and saw stars in the NFL and NBA who come right out of high school or right out of college and are suddenly on national television. And in baseball, that just doesn't happen. The money doesn't come right away. The fame doesn't come right away. And it seems like a tougher road. And I don't think that's exclusive to black players. I think there are others who see that. But, you know, some of the best athletes of our generation, I think, you know, look at that and say, why would I wait 5 years in the minor leagues, you know, to kind of break through when I can be a star right away in one of those other sports? And I think that the fewer black players there are, the fewer black people in leadership, you know, the pipelines disappear. There's just not as much of a connection. And I think, you know, largely white men run baseball and always have. And you know, in some cases consciously, in many cases unconsciously, that's who they look for when they try to hire. And so just a number of things kind of contribute to that, as well as the fact that it's a sport like many that requires you to sort of hit the travel ball circuit if you're going to be serious about it. And travel ball costs money. And, you know, if you don't have the money, you don't get the exposure and you don't get the scholarships and so on and so forth. And so it's also a sport that's harder for poorer families to be a part of. And so, you know, black kids in those circumstances are having trouble kind of breaking in. So I think there's a lot of things and it's a lot of different reasons for different people. But, you know, by and large, the impact's been the same. And it's something that Major League Baseball is really disappointed in.
How seriously is the league taking it?
You know, at least publicly, they've, you know, made some contributions to the Players Alliance, which is a group formed by players after the death of George Floyd to sort of speak out on issues of racial and social justice. The league offered them a pretty major contribution over the next 10 years. You know, they've created this Hank Aaron Invitational, which is where they get, you know, maybe 40, 50 of the best black players in the country, bring them into a camp for a week, let them work with major league coaches and players, and then let them play a showcase game in Atlanta in the big league stadium. But, you know, I think a lot of people around the game would tell you that until you see a conscious hiring of black general managers, of, you know, black men in the, or women even in the commissioner's office, you know, you know, there's two black managers in baseball out of 30 teams. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people that look at that as a serious problem, too.
Yeah. Well, you and your colleagues at the Washington Post are taking it seriously. The team went deep into the stories of nine black players, each from a different generation, including one of the best of all time. Let's listen to this.
Left-hander Vic Wirtz up and left-hander Don Little ready to go. Here's the pitch to Wirtz. Here's a long drive to deep, deep center field. Bays back to the wall. Makes an incredible catch. Turns and fires it in. What a catch by Willie Mays.
Center fielder Willie Mays making a running catch with his back turned to the infield in the 1954 World Series. That was, you know, maybe one of the most famous plays in all of Major League Baseball history. How did Willie Mays experience being one of the first black players in Major League Baseball?
You know, my colleague Dave Shinen wrote a really interesting article just kind of tracking the sort of interesting position that Willie Mays occupied, which was he wasn't the first, so he wasn't Jackie Robinson. He didn't sort of get inundated with all of the racism and hate that Robinson did. But he was the first one who became sort of the mainstream star, who sort of could rival Mickey Mantle in fame and respect around the country. And as Dave Shinen put it, I think really fairly, sort of the first one that white America, you know, adopted as its own. And you know, I think, you know, that is a transition that made a lot of people think that Willie Mays didn't experience racism because it wasn't something that he brought up a lot. It wasn't something that, you know, you saw him encounter, but of course he did. And, you know, he's sort of an example of why, you know, these stories need to be told again and again is to sort of remember that just because there was this veneer that everything was okay and he sort of wasn't the first and he didn't encounter all the racism mm-hmm. and all the overt stuff. Like, this is a guy who had to start his career in the Negro Leagues. He was not allowed to play in the major leagues. And a few years later, you know, he's a star loved by people of all races. And it's important to realize that that didn't happen overnight. It didn't fix everything for him. And
Well, and I think people might be surprised to know that he and the man who did break the color barrier in baseball, Jackie Robinson, they didn't always see eye to eye.
Yeah, the approach that each took to his position, you know, as sort of an icon of racial justice or not, I guess, you know, it was something that Jackie Robinson talked about a lot and sort of felt was an important thing to talk about a lot. And it was something that Willie Mays didn't talk about a lot and didn't bring up. And mm-hmm. it's sort of a fascinating precursor to, you know, it that hasn't changed. We still, you know, people are still pushing for things to change. And there are still some that are more comfortable than others in doing it. And some that would rather sort of be quiet examples to the rest of us.
Well, speaking of precursors, and we can't get to all nine profiles, but I do want to ask you to make the connection to the protests that we've seen today and a player named Mudcat Grant. Now, this was a pitcher for the Cleveland Indians who did face just outrageous racism from his own teammates. At a game in 1960, he protested the national anthem. His coach was so furious that he confronted Grant, hurled racial slurs at him, and then the pitcher punched his coach in the face.
Yeah, he was one of the people who was unapologetically going to stand up against racism. You know, I think probably for better or worse, sometimes we look at people like Jackie Robinson, certainly Willie Mays, and say, you know, these guys, oh, they dealt with it all with aplomb, as if that is sort of this thing to be celebrated, that they just kind of took all this and kept quiet. But I mean, obviously the change comes when they don't. And Mudcat Grant was someone who was, you know, he was a real groundbreaker in terms of athlete activism. And it's funny that he's sort of lost to history, unfortunately, at times,
yeah.
you know, because he's one of the first people that was a little bit ahead of the game. He was sort of one of the first Black athletes to understand what that platform could do. And he made people talk about it. I mean, all the big name writers, was Frank DeFord and Shirley Povich, were writing about Mudcat Grant. And, you know, it made a template for a new kind of athlete and a fearlessness that I think we do see in some of his successors today.
In his protest, he rewrote the anthem with lyrics that basically said he was not free, that he was not free to go to places like Mississippi. So very much a precursor to what we've seen today. Now, you wrote a profile of the superstar Ken Griffey Jr., who burst into stardom in the early 1990s and the late 80s with the Seattle Mariners. We have this tape from a game in 1990 when he and his dad, his teammate, Ken Griffey Sr., made history. Let's start with Sr.
Sliced a fairly deep left center field. Devo White back to the track, the wall, makes the leap, and the old man has done it. One more time, fly away.
So that was Ken Griffey Sr. Here comes Jr. next up.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
3-0 pitches hit deep into left center field, and Bishop will look up, and father and son have hit back-to-back home runs. My, oh my, etch that in your baseball history book.
I grew up a fan of baseball as a kid in the 1990s. I remember Ken Griffey Jr. vividly. It's funny to me to see him as an old man now, essentially. I mean, he's not that old, but he's not the kid he once was. But who is he today? Because from your story, I learned that he is trying to get more Black players into the sport. How's he doing that?
Yeah, he was hired this offseason as a consultant to Major League Baseball, which, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. had always sort of been a figurehead. They'd fly him in to these events to try to get Black kids involved because he's the Pied Piper. Everyone sort of flocks to him. But now he's got this kind of official title with MLB. And I think what he wants to do is to create ways to reestablish pipelines for Black players, because something he talks about a lot now is, you know, his dad always played. He knew that he could play baseball. He had role models, and I think he felt he had a place in baseball, but he thinks a lot of Black kids today do not. They don't feel like that pipeline's there. And part of his vision is really to make people who are not the most talented athletes in the world, like he was, feel like they belong in the game, whether that's as a trainer or a GM or whatever it is. And I think he's trying to sort of tap into his network and say, how can we, you know, get these kids in front of major leaguers, former major leaguers, and make them feel like there's people that came before them and that they belong here.
I'm thinking about these stories of baseball players from the past that you've been telling me, and thinking about the efforts that Major League Baseball has made, especially since George Floyd's death. We now have athletes once again stepping into the role of activists. What do you think is at stake here for the sport? if baseball doesn't start bringing more black players into the game?
I think Jerry Manuel, who's works with MLB and is a former major league manager and player, kind of said it best. Like, these are connections that used to be so strong. You know, baseball in the black community, it was a staple of their culture, as he told me. You know, he remembers as a kid going to church and you know, stopping for lunch and then going to the baseball game with his family, and that was what you did. And it's not as integral a part of life as it was in many black communities. And I think that what's lost is sort of a connection to a very real and vivid and rich history and past that, you know, a game without black players now, or, you know, with 7% black players, is just not necessarily a representation of this country as a whole and not what the sport was and could be.
Chelsea Janes is a national baseball reporter for the Washington Post. We're going to link you to the series that she and her colleagues did. It's called The Nine, and it profiles nine prominent black baseball players throughout the history of the game. Chelsea, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.